I know you have been frustrated with this whole undertaking. Before we get to Miller, I just want you to give your take, and maybe it's changed. I know you had expressed a couple months ago, like, what's the point of all of this with the FBI and college basketball?
Well, you know, I would take a little bit of different direction. You know, I heard the Mark Ziegler comments from a while ago. I don't know. Like, I think that a lot of this is being over-dramatized. I mean, I really do, because what I think is this, is that, and we'll get into it, is that, you know, look, do I think that Sean Miller has played by the letter of the law, you know, since the day he arrived at Arizona? I don't. And, like, look, his assistant coach has pled guilty to fraud in court. I mean, you know, I don't know if he'll be sentenced to jail, but, like, he's pled guilty. But I would also say this, is that I'm kind of surprised, and I feel like I'm the only person in the media saying this. Like, why are we taking every word said on a wiretap casually said between two friends, one of them a convicted felon now, the other one a noted con man who over the last couple of days has admitted to stealing from everybody from his investors on down? I'm just surprised at the coverage of this trial, in that I don't think that just because something is said on a wiretap, we have to take it as 100% absolute factual correct, you know, actually factually correct, excuse me.
We don't have to. But I think you're framing it correctly, but it's actually against what you're saying. Casually said on a wiretap is more believable. If you want to push back on what Dawkins is saying, you know, on the stand, hey, that is a you know, predetermined approach, delivery. I mean, this is just what they talk about in college basketball. And the other thing is, Aaron, when you're trying to break a big case, you're going to deal with scumbags. And you're right. Maybe not everything they're saying is true, but basically every time we deal with this with the feds, they're bringing in less than stellar people who you could say, hey, I don't believe Jose Canseco that 75% of baseball is on steroids. I don't believe people, you know, going after Lance Armstrong. This is what happens when you're trying to break big cases. You're going to have dirtbags spilling what we believe to be the truth.
Yeah, see, I would disagree with that, and I'll tell you why, Steve, is because, listen, I'm not saying Sean Miller is 100% clean. I'm not saying rules weren't broken. But we've all been on conversations with our buddies and our boys, and what do you do when you're on the phone with your buddies? You BS. Yeah, you talk crap. Like, how many times you've been on the phone with your buddy? Oh, yeah, I was at the bar last night. Oh, I had, dude, I must have had 30 beers by the end of the night. You didn't have 30 beers. You had like 8 and you got really drunk. You know, oh, that girl was so into me. Was she really into you, bro? Or are you just playing it up because you're on the phone with your buddy? And so when I sit here and I hear, Sean Miller, he's paying $10,000 a month for DeAndre Ayton. Well, you know, I mean, is he really, or is it one of those deals where, you know, maybe something is going on underneath the table, but is it really $10,000? I don't know. And I'll tell you this, like, you know, I just look at some of the facts that have been presented, right? So, like, everyone is taking every word that comes out of these wiretaps as absolute gold. So let me give you an example of something that I just find preposterous. Book Richardson claimed the other day that he was told by Will Wade that Will Wade had a deal for $300,000 on the table for Naz Reid. Steve, you're smart enough to know, I'm smart enough to know, every listener in the audience is smart enough to know, why would a head coach ever tell a competing recruiter from a competing school that not only is he willing to cheat for a player, that he's willing to astronomically cheat? You know, a lot of the stuff that Christian Dawkins says doesn't make sense. Why does he have to ask Book Richardson what's going on with DeAndre Ayton if he's caught on a separate wiretap saying, you know, Sean Miller trusts me so much that he wants me to move out to Arizona and handle DeAndre Ayton from here? So I guess we're both kind of getting to the same point, in that Sean Miller is not an I don't believe, my personal opinion is that he is a totally upstanding, you know, salt of the earth, you know, blue collar, I play by the rules guy. But I also just think that I don't think anything, frankly, that comes out of Christian Dawkins' mouth is credible, whether it is in a casual conversation or whether it is on the witness stand. As a matter of fact, I would argue that the stuff he said on the witness stand, while it made him look like a terrible human being, that might be the only truthful stuff that he said since the beginning of this.
Aaron Torres, Fox Sports Radio, the Aaron Torres podcast, college football and college basketball expert. Adam, fire.
My question Aaron, when we get down to it, is why would the FBI be going for that wiretap in the first place if they didn't have reason to believe that what they were going to get not only was true, and maybe not 100% true. I mean, we're at the point where we're talking about, was it 10,000, 5,000, 100? Was it three big gulps? Whatever it was. It was against the rules. It was an improper benefit. And when we're saying that we're putting him on the wiretap, it's not just to say, this is our evidence. This is the only thing we have. It's the only reason that we're going to be able to go on. Because I don't think the FBI is going to make a case just based on that. It's part of the picture overall. And the idea that Christian Dawkins, as a convicted felon, loses credibility, I almost feel like it adds credence in the other way to say that we already know that this is a person who has been willing to commit crimes of this nature in the past. And so we have... our belief is a little stronger that this is the type of person who would be involved in something like this. Is any of that something where you see a possibility?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I would also say this. First of all, Christian Dawkins admitted on the witness stand yesterday that he was literally stealing from his own investors, that they would give him money to give to players or players' families, and he would pocket it himself. I would also say that he also admitted yesterday that the FBI, and I think it was because they wanted to basically, for lack of a better word, entrap coaches. You know, the undercover agents that were quote-unquote funding this operation, they were believed to be at the time, you know, hedge fund guys or whatever, they kept pushing Christian Dawkins to pay coaches. And Christian Dawkins said, why are we paying coaches? Let's just go straight to the families themselves. And so, listen, I'm not a smart enough legal mind, and there are way smarter legal experts you could have on this show, but I think that the FBI started barking up this tree, and maybe, it feels like it wasn't going the way that they expected it to. I mean, when you have an undercover FBI agent posing as a money man saying, we need to give money to assistant coaches, and Christian Dawkins is like, that's not the way we really do business. To me, that feels like the FBI really trying, sitting there saying, we've invested this much time, this much effort, this much energy into this case. We have to come up with something. And so, again, to go back to what we're saying, guys, I think we're kind of on the same page, although we're looking at the evidence from a different perspective. I'm not saying that cheating didn't occur. I'm not saying that Christian Dawkins is a good guy or a bad guy. I'm not saying that he didn't take bribes with the intention of bribing families, and in some cases they got the money, in some cases they didn't. What I'm just saying is, I guess what I'm just saying is this, is that some of the things that we're just taking as fact, as like actual, like, Sean Miller, well, it has to, well, there's no evidence, there's no tangible evidence that could be used to convict Sean Miller or Will Wade. I don't even think there's anything the NCAA can do to get with Sean Miller and Will Wade. So I think we're getting to the same point. These guys aren't trustworthy. Crimes were committed. NCAA rules were broken. I guess my problem is, if in the legal system itself, we have an innocent until proven guilty presumption, why in the court of public opinion have we decided that Sean Miller and Will Wade are actually guilty when there is actually no hard, tangible evidence that they are? As a matter of fact, I take it one step further. Right now, we have more, and by the way, it's something nobody's talking about, and I don't understand it. Well, I do understand it, but right now, we have more tangible proof that Bill Self, the Kansas coach, was involved in a pay-for-play scheme when he was texting an Adidas bag man, and the bag man saying, I've never let you down. The only time I ever let you down was DeAndre and blah, blah, blah. I think right now we have more actual proof that Bill Self cheated to get players. Bill Self was active cheating to get players than either Will Wade or Sean Miller. Not saying they didn't do it. I'm just going on proof and facts and things that we actually have as factual information.
Will Sean Miller make it to next season?
Guys, I'm telling you, I think he will, and for the thousandth time, and this is the last time I'll say it, I don't think Sean Miller is salt of the earth, clean as a whistle. But you need something to fire him, and right now, you know, Sean Miller's on the hook for an $8 million buyout. They don't have anything to fire him with cause on. Now, listen, what I'll say interesting, what's interesting to me, Steve, is, you know, with this Condoleezza Rice, committee that they got put together, supposedly coaches are now being more held accountable than ever before for the actions of their assistant coaches. You know, you can't pull the Rick Pitino, I had no idea somebody was running a brothel in one of my dorms on campus. You know, you can't play that card anymore. So I'm curious to see what the NCAA does. But in the meantime, unless something else comes out in this trial, I don't know how much longer we have, I don't think Arizona can fire Sean Miller unless they're willing to pay that $8 million buyout.
What's
saying he's...
Aaron. No, finish up.
No, I'm not. I just don't think they do. And I think right now we're looking at both Sean Miller and Will Wade back coaching college basketball next year.
Let's spend a few minutes before we get you out of here on the Mountain West Conference. The team you're most excited about, it seems to be New Mexico.
They just got some dudes. They really do. You know, J.J. Caldwell, former top 100 recruit at Texas A&M, just committed last week. Antoine January, a high school player from out where I live in L.A., committed last night. He was originally committed to Illinois. So I'm just saying, you know, with the guys that they got coming back, Vance Jackson, Carlton Bragg, they just got a lot of really interesting pieces. Now, can Paul Weir put it all together? I honestly don't know, but they certainly have the most talent, I would say. I would say the team I'm most interested in, though, is the guys up north to you in Reno. I've been, since day one, not sold on Steve Alford. To his credit, he's kept that team together, but I'll be curious to see if they can kind of keep the momentum going from the Eric Musselman era.
Well, I'll say on New Mexico, I would have New Mexico fourth, because I don't trust Paul Weir and his ability to coach and pull this together, because he did not do a very good job last year. I actually trust Alford, and I think he's going to have a good team that'll put together. I will have Reno in my top three. I'll put San Diego State ahead of Paul Weir and that collection of talent at New Mexico. And if Cada comes back to Utah State, then Utah State's ahead of him.
Yeah, I would put right now Utah State probably number one in terms of teams that I actually expect a lot from. I'm surprised that you don't trust Paul Weir, but you do trust Brian Dutcher. Explain that one to me.
Well, I think Dutcher did a great job last year. As the season went along, I think he did a great job.
Well, I mean, and that's the problem, right? They've started slow 2 years in a row, picked it up late.
Yeah.
I don't know what Mark Ziegler said, being around that program every day, and I love the work that he does covering that program day in and day out, but I do know there was some frustration early. I need to see it for 3, 4, 5 months with Brian Dutcher. I know through the years there's been injuries. They actually have some really interesting pieces sitting out last year that'll be eligible this year. I just need to see him do it from November on, because I certainly think the talent is there. I don't disagree with you guys at all on that one.
And I'll also want to see what the Fresno roster finishes up with. But Justin Hudson, as the best defensive coordinator, well, now he's head coach in the country, I trust him more than Weir as well. And believe me, after the first year at New Mexico, I was a gigantic Weir guy, but I did not like what I saw at all this past season from a chemistry standpoint. He's got some great players. He's going to have to put it all together.
Well, and I'll tell you this, is that, you know, I thought it was pretty cool year one, the whole we're going to go with a different starting lineup every game, and I've talked to him about it in the past. I think it hurt him last year. I mean, I think that they had some really talented players, namely, you know, Vance Jackson, Carlton Bragg, both came from pretty big programs. And I just think that a lot of those guys felt like I can't get into a rhythm. I'm playing great. I scored 20 points, and the next game I'm not starting on the bench. And I understand why Paul decided to do that. But I do wonder, as he kind of brings in more high caliber talent, I just don't know if that's going to fly. Like, you know, you're bringing in top 100 recruits, guys that have played at the high major level. I don't know that you can get away with just switching up your starting lineup based on what the last practice looked like, stuff like that. I'm curious to see if he proves me wrong. I'm curious to see if he eventually does go with kind of a more traditional starting lineup. I'm just curious how much longer you can kind of continue to do that.
You dropped your podcast today. You talked to PJ Washington?
Oh, yeah. Former Finley Prep guy.
Absolutely.
We talked about the 2017-2016 Finley Prep season. That was the whole interview, so I encourage everybody to go listen. So.
All right. All right, we appreciate it, man.
A little exaggeration, but...